It's Celtics coverage on CLNSradio.com.
A bomb from Thomas.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll-free, 347-215-7771.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome into the Boston Celtics post-game show here on CLNS Radio, the leading online provider of audio and video coverage for the Boston Celtics. Here we are. You can also find us on your radio dial at ESPN New Hampshire Radio, 912.50 AM. They're up in the Grand State, and they're streaming live on ESPNNHRadio.com. Again, that's ESPNNHRadio.com. Two N's in the middle there, folks. Go check it out. My name is Matt Rury, and it's good to be back. I'll say that much. I feel good. I feel ready to go. The Celtics take this one, 120-99 in the first game that they've played at TD Garden against the Brooklyn Nets here in the preseason as we wind it down. My co-host of this evening, not only Bobby Manning. Bobby, it's been a long time coming. It's been a long offseason, an exciting offseason, and I'm ready to go. I don't know about you. How do you feel tonight, man?
We got to get right down to business here. Five wins now in the preseason for the Celtics in six games. They're not real, but they feel that way nonetheless. What a fantastic night from Boston. I mean, the Celtics have been all over the place early this offseason, and now to finally see them in that building in front of, you know, a decent-sized fan appearance tonight at the Garden, It's just great to see it finally all come together between the starters. The starters have only been playing about 15 to 17 minutes a night so far, but the bench competition, there's a sense of urgency between a lot of the young players who are trying to battle for a spot on the roster. It just feels like a very competitive environment. That's the vibe I got out of tonight. And the Nets, they pushed them a few times, but every time they kind of start to push the Celtics, like we've seen before, the Celtics kind of get together and make a little run. So all in all, a great win tonight. The defense was fantastic. Early on, I thought the transition game was very strong. Some turnovers here or there bogged down the offense at times, but they look like a well-oiled machine for a team that's only been at it a few weeks now.
Yeah, listen, the Nets are going to be a team that fight pretty hard this year, I think. And that's what Scalabrine keeps saying on the TV broadcast over there. And he keeps giving this high praise to the Nets. So we're not here to do that. They did play the Celtics hard. And to me, that's kind of an embarrassment. The Celtics should and have beaten them both times during the way in the preseason. But if they drop one of these ugly games to the Brooklyn Nets this year, like they have in years past, when they're a decent team, then that would be embarrassing. And this Celtics team doesn't look like they're going to be the type of team that drops those types of games. And to me, overall, we can get into this a little bit later, they really look like they know how to close games out, finally, and they know what they need to do to get themselves ahead, and they're not going to lose to inferior teams. I have a feeling that for the first time in a while, the Celtics are going to be relatively easy to bet on if you're a betting man, or just to pick their games, because I think that they're going to show a consistency throughout the year that we haven't really seen with this team before. So I'm looking forward to the season. I'm glad to be here, and we're getting things started here. TD Garden preseason game against the Nets. You can give us a call if you'd like, 347-215-7771. That is the Movement Watches call line. And again, the number is 347-215-7771. That hasn't changed. We're going to open those call lines. Just call if you'd like, and we'll bring you on as you talk to our call screener. The phone lines are brought to you by Movement Watches. Department store watches start at $400 to $500. But the good folks over at Movement Watches have taken the middleman out and they're passing the savings directly to you. Movement Watches are slick, fashionable, and most importantly, they're affordable. They start at just $95. So go to mvntwatches.com/selfishbeat for 15% off your first order with free shipping. That's mvntwatches.com beat. Again, this is the public sports game show on TLNS Radio. Give us a call, 347-215-7771. All right, Bobby, since this is the preseason, you mentioned it, the starters don't play that much in these games. People might be wondering why we're even doing a post-game show. Well, hey, it's just to shake the rust off for the hosts here, right? Let everybody know about this great partnership with ESPN New Hampshire that we have going on, because we're all excited about that. And maybe more exciting is the fact that this Celtics roster is full of some young, talented players. When those starters can't play very much, these guys are going to step up. And since it is the preseason, we're going to focus on them to start this show. Because, quite frankly, there might be much more time to talk about some of these guys. So, bottom of the roster. That is the.
Well, when you look at the bottom of the roster, and there's an intense competition going on down there for a very limited amount of players who are going to be able to see time at the bottom of there, and it really is a split between Gerald Green, the veteran, and the young guys who have been trying to push themselves up to the top of the roster, James Young, R.J. Hunter, both saw time in Maine last year, and I don't know how anyone seriously could have given Young a chance coming into this preseason, but he put on a little bit of weight. There seems to be a sense of urgency in how he's playing, and the skill set he brings to the game is much more varied than what you see out of Hunter. Hunter, if he's going to drill threes, certainly he's going to find time. But Young, I mean, he was strong on the boards tonight, drilling threes with authority. He was putting them up there. Five threes led the team, attempted 2 for 5 overall, 10 points. It was really the first time I've seen Young lay his fist into the game in a long time, maybe since that Charlotte game years ago where he played down the stretch in some garbage time and hit a bunch of shots. But there was a sense of urgency, like I said before, with James Young that we haven't seen in a long time, just visually. And Mark D'Amico said it on Twitter tonight, the body language with James Young really stuck out. It's like he's finally feeling the sense that people are starting to push him from behind and that his time in Boston really could be coming to an end if he doesn't push it now. So 16 minutes for Young tonight, 10 points, 4 rebounds. I thought he was fantastic for what they needed out of him. R.J. Hunter, you know, threw up a few shots, hit a really deep one. That was really the only impact we saw on Hunter. So I think we started to see the balance in that race start to shift a little bit. And it's tough because opening day is 9 days ahead. I don't think there's going to be room for both of those players on the roster. And there's a really tough choice to be made between the two of them right now. Outside of them, Ben Bentel played 11 minutes, had a really tough interior rebound that I thought was great. Demetrius Jackson, shifty, able to do a lot of different things. I'm not sure he's in a position to make the roster right now. So it really is about Young or Hunter as far as the extra guard on the roster is going to go. And I think tonight you saw Young really balance out that race with his game. So we're going to bring in Nick Sesento right now. Nick, what do you think about that race tonight between Young and Hunter? It looked like they were throwing jabs back and forth a little bit. There was a sense of urgency between the both of them, which, like I said, a really competitive environment you're starting to see on this team. And it showed in how the Young players were going at it late in that game.
Well, I think that after the game R.J. Hunter had the other night, where he led the team in scoring with 17 points and then, you know, filled up the stat sheet with, you know, some rebounds and some assists, I think James Young really started to feel the heat tonight and knew that he had to come out, you know, with a better performance tonight than he's been having in previous games this preseason. So definitely, you know, it's going to be a competition. I personally think that Joe Green has a spot on this roster. I think that he's shown some of that you know, he's shown some of that veteran leadership. He's shown, you know, that he can produce in some of those minutes. He had a nice highlight alley-oop the other night. It's really between those two guys. I know we got to see a little bit of Ben Bentel, you know, tonight, but, you know, he's probably going to spend most of the season, if not all of the season, in Maine. So definitely between RJ Hunter and James Young, and I think that, you know, as these two go back and forth, it's just making the decision, you know, more difficult. I personally tend to lean on the side of RJ Hunter just because I think that he has he's shown just a little bit more confidence in the shorter time. I mean, I think James Young has, what, an extra year on him in the league or 2 years?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Yeah, an extra year on him in the league. But RJ Hunter just seems like when he comes out there, he's ready to play. Now, there was a difference tonight. Obviously, James Young had a slightly better game. James Young is showing, you know, showed tonight that he's a little bit better of a ball distributor. He had 3 assists to RJ Hunter's 1. But I mean, it's still, I'd hate to be Brad Stevens, you know what I'm saying, to have to make that choice. But then at the same time, what a great choice to have to make, that you have these guys at the back of the roster that, you know what I'm saying, they can both potentially contribute, you know what I'm saying, in a third string or in, you know what I'm saying, in given situations. So, definitely, I don't envy the position, but I'm happy as a fan that, you know, that's the situation that we're in, that our roster is so deep that we have guys, you know, way back at the back of the bench that are, you know, potentially capable of contributing.
And we're already juggling so many names right here, and you don't even consider the fact that Kelly Olynyk still hasn't even touched the court yet this preseason. There's bodies everywhere on this roster. I saw earlier Marcus Georges Hunt, Jalen Jones, Damian Lee going off to Maine. That was according to Maine's coach, Morrison. And the roster breakdown is going to keep coming over the next couple of days. Brad Stevens is saying the decisions are going to have to start being made. And the, like I said, opening night's really 9 days away at this point. It doesn't feel real. And normally the season doesn't start that early. I think that's a little earlier than usual. So I don't think we may even see a clear answer come before opening night, especially when it's been so back and forth like this, where RJ Hunter can have a big night and James Young can have a big night. And when you see stuff like that, I think you really have to go with the hand who I think is going to be most reliable, and that's Gerald Green as far as real minutes go. And I'm going to sink on the Gerald Green ship. I've seen a lot of people call for him to be cut over these last few days, and it's been streaky. It hasn't been very visually pleasant from him this preseason, but you also have to consider he's a veteran, and the preseason isn't really for veterans. And I think within the context of this offense, his speed, his athleticism, his shooting ability are perfect fits for Brad Stevens' system. You saw it tonight. The fast break was a huge emphasis among those starters. Quick passes and a spot-up shooter is something they're going to need off the bench. You haven't seen that consistently from Young so far in his career. Hunter hasn't been able to drill shots at a consistent clip. If Green's going to be able to drill his threes, and he did it tonight, 1-for-6, and he had a very awkward one fading away, and it wasn't pretty often for Green tonight. But as far as a source of offense comes off the bench, we've seen in the past from Green, he can really explode on any given night. And that's why I think they need to really keep Green here, especially as time goes on, start to maybe contain his wild play a little bit and see what you can get out of that, because they did it with Isaiah Thomas. You saw Evan Turner kind of re-culminate his career when he came here. And I think Gerald Green, I wrote about it a couple months ago, is the next great reclamation project for this team. And at $1 million a year, what do you have to lose?
Gentlemen, you know what else the preseason is for? Working out the kinks. Can you hear me now?
Well, it sounds like Rory is still having problems with his mic, so I definitely agree with pretty much everything you just said. At $1 million a year, veterans minimum contract, Brad Stevens has shown that he has the ability to turn players that previously were thought by the league to be washed up and not have very much left in the tank, and turn them around and make them into solid contributors. So I agree with you. I think Joe Green is going to be solid. I think he's going to have, you know, a good season. I think he's going to be a good contributor. Hopefully he can have a season like he had a couple of years ago. I know last year with the Heat he was a little bit inconsistent, but I think a couple of seasons ago playing with Phoenix, which is actually ironically how he got to Boston in the first place. Obviously he was drafted by Boston at the beginning of his career, but his connection with Isaiah Thomas in Phoenix is really what got him the second look from Danny Ainge. And I think if he has another season like he had in Phoenix just a couple of seasons ago, where he showed that he could, you know, score in double digits, where he could hit the three consistently, you know, in the upper 30%, you know, 35, 36, something like that percent. I don't have the stats directly in front of me. I agree. I think he can be another good reclamation project. I think he'll be a solid contributor. And I think it's a positive to have him as another athletic force coming off the bench. I mean, we have, you know, a lot more athleticism on this team this year than we had last year, you know, given Jaylen Brown, given some of the other players that we have, and I think Gerald Green is going to be a big part of that.
Yeah, and he played in an offense in Phoenix that I think is very similarly structured to the one we have right now, where it's going to be high pace, off defensive stops, running in transition. And Horford tonight, those outlet passes from him just make you swoon right out of his hands within seconds. There was one play where he just unloaded in probably a tenth of a second to Smart across the whole court. Smart spun it right to Bradley. I think in 3 seconds they went from a steal to a three-pointer by Bradley. This offense is going to be fast. It was already faster last year in terms of pace than both of those Phoenix teams that Gerald Green played for before. And he's not going to be part of that starting unit, but I think the bench is going to have to get to a place where they're playing at a similar pace to that starting unit. And we talked about it with Justin Poulin on Celtics Beat last week. We're starting to see this preseason the five guys kind of come in and play 15 minutes, come off, and then let the other crew come in and do their thing. I don't think that's how it's going to really be structured in the regular season. I think you're going to see Isaiah on the court with some bench players, or Horford on the court with some bench players. I think there's just too much of a disparity between the skill sets of the starting lineup and the skill sets of the bench, where I don't think the bench is going to be able to handle themselves completely on their own, both on offense and defense. And as you start to see those two groups mix a little more, I think you'll be able to see a very consistently fast offense. And Green can really get involved in there, whether it's spot-up threes, driving in the lane, getting ahead of the defense. His athleticism leaves room for a lot of versatility, I think. And the defense is rough, I'll tell you. There was one play where Hollis Jefferson did a little up fake. Green went flying into the roof. And the defense has always been an issue with him. And I think that's something a lot of people have a problem with, because if there's one thing this Celtics team is going to take pride in, it's their defense. I think they're going to have one of, if not the best defense in the league this year. There's just too much defensive prowess on that starting lineup. But you always have room for an exception, and if Green can put the ball in the bucket, they're going to make an exception for him, especially from three-point land. And that's where I want to see him start thriving. It didn't happen tonight, but he's shown in the past that he can shoot from out there, and they always need that.
Definitely, especially with Marcus Smart, who just this whole preseason just hasn't seemed to get his stroke. We heard a lot in the offseason about how he'd improved his mechanics, how he'd improved his shot, how he'd, you know, really worked on that. That was one aspect of the game that he worked on in the offseason. And we just haven't seen that work that he's put in on his three-point shot really come to fruition, really bear any fruit in this preseason. Hopefully he'll get it, you know, right by the time the season starts, or, you know, sometime within the season. I think it'll take some actual games for Marcus Smart, but even in a preseason game, you know, and he did fill the stat sheet with, you know, every other aspect. He had, you know, I think 3 rebounds, 4 assists, a steal and a block, but to come up with 0 points, 0 for 2 from 3-point, and didn't try another field goal, didn't have a free throw, that's really just not acceptable from Marcus Smart. So definitely having Gerald Green on there to maybe pick up the slack with some of the three-point shooting might be helpful if Marcus Smart just can't, you know, get it going this season with his three-point shot. Bobby, I think what we're going to do now is we're going to head into a quick commercial break while we let our co-host Matt Rury get his microphone check going. And we'll see what comes up after this break. We also have a caller on the line once again. The Movement Watches toll-free call lines are open. The phone number is the same as it's always been, 347-215-7771. We're going to head to a break real quick, and then we'll come back, see what's going on with Matt Rury, and then we'll get to the first callers and hopefully more callers after that.
Hey, this is Nick Gelso, the founder of CLNS Radio, and I just want to take a moment to talk to you about Movement Watches. Movement Watches, if you haven't heard of this company, it started by two broke college kids that wanted to wear stylish watches but couldn't afford them. So what did they do? They started their own company. As you know, CLNS Radio was founded by a bunch of Celtics fans way back in 2009, and from there we started a company that made a career out of it, so we can absolutely relate to the owners of Movement Watches. And let me tell you, I purchased the Chrono Gunmetal watch. This watch is so sleek, black stainless steel, it's light, it's versatile, it's great for dress occasions or even casual affairs. A little bit more about Movement Watches, they start at $95. I purchased the Chrome Gunmetal watch for under $100, and I know with the watch I purchased, you're looking at $400 to $500 in a department store. So give yourself a big discount right in time for the holidays. You can get 15% off today with free shipping, and if you don't like the watch, guess what? You can return it for free. All you have to do is go to movementwatches.com/Celtics Beat. Wait a second, even the name is cool. It's spelled MVMTwatches.com/Celtics Beat. Again, go to MVMTwatches.com/Celtics Beat.
Cool.
CLNS Radio's leading online coverage of the Boston Celtics is now even more comprehensive than ever. From the Celtics postgame show, to the Guard Report, to CSL, and to Celtics Beat, CLNS Radio's Boston Celtics news feed provides narrated breaking news, game recaps, and news and notes for the NBA's winningest franchise, all provided in real time. Don't have the time to surf the web or search engines and plunge your head into your computer or smartphone to read up on all the latest on the Celtics? No problem. Multitask while listening to CLNS's Celtics news feed. And for the 2016-17 NBA campaign, the Boston Celtics pregame report with myself, Larry H. Russell, will be released on the news feed on game days at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, making it the first pregame report to air anywhere. We will give you a featured interview from someone providing opposing insight, pregame notes, and go on a Celtics draft pick watch, all in just 12 minutes or less. Available on the Boston Celtics news feed on iTunes and Stitcher and the CLNS Radio mobile podcast app.
Out the kinks, ladies and gentlemen. That's what the preseason's all about. The Celtics have figured it out. Apparently, I haven't until now. They do win in the TD Garden here in Boston, 120-99. And they beat the Brooklyn Nets tonight in their penultimate preseason game. They play one more preseason game on Wednesday against the Knicks. And the Celtics are looking good. These guys, we're talking just a few minutes ago. Nick Sesento filling in for a few minutes. Thank you, sir. He's been on the call lines as well, checking in at 347-215-7771. And that's where you can call us tonight if you want to get in on the Movement Watches call lines. But he and Bobby, you guys were talking a little bit about the young players, and I tried to kick that conversation off, but obviously – didn't get to finish it. So I will just say this quickly before we go to those callers on the Movement Watches call lines, that the race at the bottom of the roster is very interesting. And I'm kind of hoping that the Celtics find a way to sign one of these young players to go to the D League and have a chance to play with the team in case of an injury or next year or what have you, because they're all playing really hard. They're showing that they want to be in the NBA, and it's going to be a tough decision for Brad Stevens. And the one thing I wanted to throw out there, Bobby, is that it may not even be the stuff that we see in these games. It may weigh more on the things that he sees over the next week up till the first night of the season on October 26th. It may be stuff that he sees in practice.
Yeah, and from the Gerald Green perspective, they're really going to have to make a tough decision when it comes to him. And I already told you what I would do with him. I'm keeping him until that sinks ships. I think he's just too perfect of a fit in this system. I think where the team is at right now is win now. It's why Al Horford is here. It's why they have this team constructed the way it is. Certainly, you want to see some young guys get a chance and get some run here or there, but at the end of the day, I think this team needs to be constructed as well as they can to make a run at Cleveland. Danny Ainge said it himself. They're not backing down from Cleveland this year. They got to do the best they can to compete in the East. And certainly that's a lofty goal. And who knows if Gerald Green is the difference between them taking the next step or not. It doesn't seem like it. But if he's able to help them more than RJ Hunter or James Young, and they can see that at the end of the day, I really want to stick with him. And I'm not worried about sacrificing either one of those young players, because they haven't – either one of them hasn't shown the ability to push this team to the next level, even get involved yet. In James Young's case, I've really only seen two times over the past 2 years where he's been able to get in a game and make his mark on the game. And with these young players, even the back of the end of the roster players, you have to choose guys who are going to be able to come in spurts and impact the game for 5, 6, maybe 10 at most minutes at a time in a game. You got to be able to come in there and make an impact in a short amount of time. There's not going to be time for James Young to come in and take 6, 7, 8 shots to get his groove in before he's back on the bench. There's going to be maybe a 2, 3 minute window where they need to throw him in and he has to do the most he can to impact the game. So as far as the end of the roster goes, whoever can come in and give them a burst of energy is the best choice for that. And I think that's Gerald Green. Yeah.
Well, I think that he's probably going to be on the team regardless. I'm pretty sure that I don't really consider him to be one of those guys on the bubble. I think that they're going to keep him, and I think they like him around. You mentioned earlier he's a veteran. I think they like that aspect of him. He can shoot the ball. He's a scoring punch. Maybe inconsistent at times, but he can definitely score the basketball. I think the guys that you're really wondering about are going to be James Young, as you mentioned, RJ Hunter. Is Demetrius Jackson going to catch on with the Celtics here? He looks pretty good in that number 9 jersey. He's been making some nice passes. He made some nice passes tonight. He gets into the lane, which is something that the Celtics want to really do this year. They're all going to be attacking the basket. And I think that he would fit in around here, but maybe not this season since they have a plethora of guards that can play the position. So that may be the most intriguing story as far as the Celtics are concerned in the preseason. But once the season gets started, we're really going to be focusing on those starters and the impact that newcomer Al Horford is going to bring to the team. So we're going to get into that in just a few minutes. But first, we go to our first caller on the Movement Watches call lines at 347-215-7771. It is Miley from the Bleed Green Facebook group.
Hi,
Miley, how's it going tonight? Miley, you're on the Celtics post-game show. What's up, man?
All right, well, I'll talk to
Miley.
Yo, what's happening?
How are you?
Miley, what do you got?
Welcome to the show.
Thanks. I'm ready to see how Al Horford does.
So we were just saying that's
good.
I mean, we were focusing on the younger guys in the first 25, 30 minutes of the show, but the next step here is to move on and take a look towards the regular season and talk about what sort of an impact Al Horford is going to have on this team. And so far, in the limited minutes he's played in the preseason, he's been very active. He's done a lot of things that I didn't realize that he was fully capable of doing, as far as shooting the three consistently and getting back on defense faster than anybody else for a chase down block, things like that. His energy has been really high. So I think going into the season, we should have some high hopes for him. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I feel like we're going to have pretty high hopes for him. I think he's going to help us on the perimeter shooting for, like, threes and just the outside shooting and rim protection.
So, Bobby.
The rim protection was fantastic tonight. You saw it on Brook Lopez, and we've gotten a chance to see him up against a few high-caliber centers now in his short time. He was going head-to-head with Roy Hibbert, who I'm not sure you'd consider a high-caliber center anymore, but as far as physical size and stature goes, that's a very overwhelming matchup, especially for an undersized guy like Horford, and he took it in stride. The fundamentals he plays with in every area of the game is just so exciting to watch. He does everything at a high level, and I don't think the stats are going to blow you away this year just because he's going to touch every area of the game a little bit. I don't think they're going to lean on him to score a ton of points. I don't think they're going to lean on him to pass the ball a ton, but he's going to touch every one of those areas. He's going to be a very well-rounded player this year. And we talked about it before the show, Matt. I don't think there's a more better bet on the team as a shoe-in all-star than Horford just because of how many areas they're going to press him to touch over such a long time within a game.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, Bobby, because Miley just touched on it too, as far as perimeter shooting is concerned. I know you're a little worried about who's going to fill in for Kelly Olynyk while he's out with that injury. How do you feel about Horford taking a few extra three-pointers a game? I mean, personally, I'd like to see him shoot all around, like you said, touch all areas of the court. I think, by the way, a lot of Celtics are going to be that type of player. They're a jack-of-all-trades. They can do a lot of things. And with the athleticism of some of these guys, they're going to be a lot of fun to watch and compete with some of the best teams out there. So, but regardless, how do you feel about Horford's perimeter shooting? Because that's something that definitely in the past couple of preseason games he surprised me with.
I feel better about his perimeter shooting than Amir Johnson's, I'll tell you that. Every time Amir Johnson tucks up a corner three, I just want to faint. Slow release, and Horford's got a slow release himself, but it's much smoother than Johnson's. And I definitely feel a lot more comfortable with Horford shooting the perimeter three because we saw him have success with it last year. Over 30%, more threes than he's ever shot in his career. He's not coming here as a first-time three-point shooter, and it kind of shocks a lot of people because early in his career when he was playing at elite levels too, that wasn't an intricate part to his game. But now over the past season or so, he's really worked to make that a cornerstone of his game almost. We saw last year with Atlanta. So I have
right,
no worries at all about him tossing up some threes.
Well, I mean, but so my only concern is that we're not to pump Kelly Olynyk up too much, but he was at one point one of the top five shooting centers in the league, or big men if you want to say that, even power forwards, whoever they may be, 6'10", 6'11". He was in the top five as far as percentage is concerned. So before Olynyk got hurt, and again, not to pump him up, he's not Larry Bird, I'm not trying to do that, I'm just saying that he was performing at a high level for the Celtics last year, and if they're trying to duplicate something like that, I'm not so sure that Al Horford is that guy. But on the other side, the bright side is that I don't think they're going to be asking him to take a lot of those shots. I think that they're going to be more of a ball movement team this year. I think that he's going to man the pivot at the top, and he can also dive through the lane if teams start to front him up there. And if he gets the ball at the three-point line and he's open, he's going to shoot it. Otherwise, you're going to see cutters all over the place. These guys are going to be moving left and right, and I'm just excited to see the types of plays that Brad Stevens rolls out there with yet another all-star caliber player to go alongside Isaiah Thomas and some rising stars in the league in Marcus Smart, Avery Bradley. Go down the list. This young Celtics team is going to be very exciting this year. It's good to be a Celtics fan. I'm not talking championship just yet, but they are going to be fun to watch. And I'm so close to just putting it out there and guaranteeing that they win a first-round series, because anything short of that, to me, it should be disappointing if you're a Celtics fan.
Massive.
So, Miley from the Bleed Green Facebook, thank you so much for calling. The Movement Watches toll-free call lines at 347-215-7771 and riling me up a little bit with that great discussion. Okay, Bobby, what do you think about all this? how am I overvaluing the Celtics again? I tend to do that a little bit, but this time I feel pretty strongly about it. I think they're going to be solid.
You added a second all-star caliber player in Al Horford. They have to take the next step this year. There's so much hype around this team. They have so much defense. The amount of defense they have on this team just blows me away. And I said it last week, if Jaylen Brown starts to develop as far as skill set goes into a great defensive player, because we haven't seen it yet early this preseason, but the physical tools he has, I could see those translating into a very high-level defensive player. And that's on top of Bradley, Smart, Crowder, Horford. And the versatility beyond the defensive skill set that all these guys hold, they can all defend multiple positions. The rotations defensively that they're able to put out there with these guys, it's just a well-oiled machine defensively, and that leads to a very effective fast break attack. So I think when you take those two things into consideration, they're going to have a very solid foundation to both get stops and score points off those stops. The half-court offense still scares me a little bit, but I think they're going to be able to score enough points and get enough stops to win over 50 games this year.
Yeah, and you know what? Marcus Smart actually said it before the game. He was interviewed by Gorman and Scal earlier today on Comcast Sportsnet. And he basically – they asked him about the identity of the team now that Al Horford has gotten his – or put his imprint on it in the first few preseason games, in the first few weeks of training camp. And he basically said that they're still a defensive team, but they're going to have a little more – they're going to have a little more flash on offense. That's not word for word. That's paraphrasing, but he basically said they were going to have a little more glitz and glamour on offense, and they were going to be flashy, but still their heart was going to be on the defensive end. So I think you hit it right on the head. Defense creates offense, and if you can get a stop and it leaks somebody out and then they're running, then you get a slam dunk on the other end, and it's exciting, and it gets the crowd pumped up, and people love dunks, man. We know people love dunks. You get Jordan Mickey out on the break a couple times a game, even if he's only playing 5 or 6 minutes. You get Jaylen Brown out on the break a couple times a game if he's playing 10 or 12 minutes. And that Garden is going to be rocking again because those guys can throw it down. They've proved it already in the preseason. So I'm excited to see this defense lock down on some teams, create some turnovers, and run.
Yeah, and I'll point back to that play again tonight that stuck out to me the most. Horford getting that steal. It was early in the first half. Dishing it right out to Smart. Horford's outlet passes are just a beauty. They're no Kevin Love outlet passes, but they're right up there. And they're, of course, better than the Sullinger heaves we were watching last year. Gets it right out to Smart. Quick dish to Bradley. I think they crossed the whole court and got a three in about 3 seconds or so. The offense is so fast. It might be the fastest in the league when push comes to shove, especially with all the defensive stops they're going to be getting, as you assume. But I think the fast break is going to be the cornerstone of that offense, because when you look at half-court sets, I still really don't see a player who's going to be able to distribute effectively in a half-court set. And especially
True.
On that second line, someone's going to have to come up and do that in the place of Evan Turner, because they relied on Turner to do that a lot last year, and now you don't even have him to do that.
That's where you might see Terry Rozier step up, but you said the magic word, and we'll get back to Turner, I'm sure. You said it, so I'm going to take a second to talk about Mr. Jared Sullinger, who's moved his way up to Toronto. Not sure what his pregame meal is up there, but I'm sure he's enjoying it. I'm going to also bring Nick Sesento in on this one because I want to get his opinion. Because there's sentiment around here from certain terrestrial radio hosts that people are overvaluing Al Horford when they didn't want him prior to the free agent period. And to that I say this is ridiculous, because when you look at the upgrade that the Celtics have made, Al Horford is a million times better than Jared Sullinger. Just look at the comparison. It's not even close. So for anyone trying to spell out there and discount the fact that the Celtics have made a huge free agent acquisition in the offseason in Al Horford, can shove it as far as I'm concerned. I just want to get that out there because the upgrade from Sullinger to Horford is ridiculous. Nick Cecento, how many times did I complain about the lazy, lackadaisical play of Jared Sullinger last year to you? Can you even count the amount of times that that guy made me angry because he just seemed like he was not interested or slacking off or turning the ball over? The list goes on. Al Horford is not going to have moments like that.
No, and I don't think that you were the only one. I think that, I mean, and I never like to beat the, you know, the dead horse because Gelso was particularly hard on Sully as well. I know you were, and I know that several other folks were as well. I don't know if I necessarily see Horford as an upgrade over Sully, although obviously he's an upgrade over Sully. I see Sully more as kind of like just the one that we just let go, and then we gave the contract that we would have given to Sully to Zeller, who I don't think is doing very much. Now, in terms of Al Horford, I mean, anybody that says Al Horford wasn't a good pickup doesn't know what they're talking about. He was an all-star last season. And I think if you look at his play, yes, it's only preseason. Nobody wants to get ahead of themselves. But if you look at Al Horford this season and this preseason, he seems like a rejuvenated player. Tonight wasn't his best night, but if you saw maybe the first game that he came back, the second game, the minutes that he's played, Brad Stevens isn't playing the starters, you know, several minutes. He's basically giving them about a quarter each of playing time and then trying to figure out the rest of his rotation, because that's really what, you know, where the key to this team is going to be. And Horford, I mean, sure, his three-point shot may not be the greatest three-point shot. It may be a slow release, but it is absolutely something you have to respect as a defense. And that then opens up the rest of the offense, not just simply because he spreads the floor like Kelly Olynyk, but also because he can not just pick and roll with Isaiah Thomas, he can also pick and pop, and you just have to completely respect that aspect of his game. And on top of that, he's defensively just so much of a better defensive player than Sully that it's incredible. I was watching the game against the Knicks the other night, and he was actually out. He stepped out a few times to defend on switches to defend Carmelo Anthony, who is a completely different player, and he was able to stay with Carmelo Anthony and get in Carmelo Anthony's face and challenge a lot of his shots. These are the things that Al Horford brings, and I think one of the things, in addition to the things that have already been mentioned, his better defense, the ability to, you know, shoot on the pick and pop, the ability to, you know, his outlet passes, is also the veteran leadership that he brings. He brings something that nobody on this team has before. I mean, obviously, Avery Bradley has been to the conference finals with us in 2012 when he was still a young player. He wasn't a totally key piece or, you know, the as big a piece of the team as he is now. But Al Horford brings that veteran leadership to this team that we desperately need. I think this team has several more, maybe not several, but a few more veteran leaders that can help both the starting lineup, like Al Horford, but also, as we mentioned before, Jello Green, who can help the, you know, second unit in, you know, maybe bringing some, you know, stability, maybe bringing some, you know, leadership, some know-how, some mentorship to some of these young players that really haven't been there before. And a lot of our players that are going to be key pieces to this team, like Rozier, like Jaylen Brown, they haven't been even in this league. Like in the case of Jaylen Brown, he's a rookie. Rozier is, for most intents and purposes, and although he's in his second year, is also pretty much, I mean, you know, going to be, you know, new to getting significant minutes this season as well. I know he got minutes in the playoffs last year and at the end of the season, but we need these guys to provide that leadership, to provide that, you know, that calming presence. As Bobby mentioned earlier, you know, he's worried about the half-court game. I'm not as worried about it because the key to a half-court game is the point guard, and we have one, and that's Isaiah Thomas, but it's also the center. If you have a solid point guard and you have a solid center, I think the half-court game is going to come. It may take a little while for the chemistry to build. It may take a little while for the rotations to get figured out and who's going to play with the second unit, you know, who from the first unit, who of the starters is going to play with the second unit. But we have those pieces that are ready. My thing is, I'm waiting to find out who's going to maybe replace Amir Johnson as the power forward if Jaylen Brown, I might be reaching a little bit because it might be putting a little bit on Jaylen Brown's shoulders, but Jaylen Brown can play the four. And if we're going to play some small ball lineup, maybe having that athleticism at the four that Jaylen Brown can offer, the ability to put it on the ground, put the ball on the floor, pass a little bit, he can obviously rebound fairly well. That might be, you know, a change that Brad Stevens might think about making to make that first unit, you know, fairly significant, more towards the second half of the season as Jaylen Brown gets accustomed to playing. But yes, Al Horford, definite upgrade in every sense of the word. My concern is, you know, Tyler Zeller needs to be dealt in that whatever the $8 million a year that he's getting. That was really a signing as contract filler for a trade, and I hope that Danny Ainge is able to make that trade in the future to get rid of Tyler Zeller's contract, because Tyler Zeller just doesn't really do much without guys like Evan Turner. And I wasn't the first one to bring up Evan Turner tonight, by the way, just so everybody knows. But without somebody that's feeding him the ball, Tyler Zeller just doesn't really do all that much of anything.
It really is amazing how much we hang our heads back on Evan Turner now. I feel like we're going to be talking about him until December.
Yeah,
whenever the calendar turns. So
Bobby, give me a quick thought on the Sellinger-Horford talk, and then we're going to hit a break.
Yeah, I'm glad Nick got towards because we really haven't seen a lot of the small ball. It's like the secret weapon that the Celtics are holding on until the games actually count. Horford fits perfectly within the context of small ball, whereas Sellinger, you had to pull him right off the court in that moment. It's almost insulting to talk about Horford and Sellinger in the same breath, because I don't think it was that we lost Sellinger and gained Horford to replace him. I think we went out and got Horford and Sellinger just had to go. I mean, I'm still scared. Every once in a while looking over at the bench that Sellinger's going to run over and come onto the court. By the time the playoffs came around, his tank was completely empty. He had nothing left when the season came around. It was an absolute... I was in the stands for game four, and every time he got up, you just put your hand on your face because it felt like they had to put him in just because he was part of the rotation, but bad things were going to happen when he came on the court. And now they don't have to put him in. All they have to do is just look forward to seeing him when they play Toronto. And that'll be interesting because Toronto is going to be one of their chief competitors in the East, and that could be a cool storyline that we end up following this year. But
I was just thinking it was going to be a sad time that I wouldn't be able to complain about Sellinger 82 times this year, but maybe I can request to be put on all the Toronto games so I can rant on him four times at least. No, all the best of luck to Sellinger up there in Canada, and really, I'm just so happy that we've upgraded, because that's really all it is. It's a giant upgrade to Al Horford, who, like we said briefly, should be another all-star caliber player this year. So that brings me to a break, and we will come back talking about who else might be an all-star player for the Celtics. You're listening to the Celtics post-game show on CLNS Radio.
What's going on, Pats Nation? This is Marvin Zahn of CLNS Radio, and I'm here to tell you right now to check out the CLNS Radio New England Patriots post-game show, hosted by myself and my co-host, Mr. Mike Knight, and live on CLNSradio.com immediately after every single Pats game. Call in at 929-477-2386 toll free to get your voice heard and contribute to the host breakdown and analysis of the latest Patriots contest. We also got the stars and sorries of the day, Twitter polls for the play of the game, and everything else that is going on with the four-time Super Bowl champion. Subscribe to the CLNS Radio New England Patriots postgame show on iTunes and Stitcher, and the best way, download the free CLNS Radio mobile app for on-demand listening, anytime, any place, anywhere.
Hi, this is Larry H. Russell with a message on behalf of the network. As a leading online provider of audio-video coverage of the Boston Celtics, CLNS Radio delivers fans the most provocative discussion and analysis from the most noted personalities in the Celtics realm of the World Wide Web. Home to the number one rated weekly podcast which covers the NBA's winningest franchise, Celtics Beat is released first thing every Sunday morning. We deliver the most unique and informed vantage point and the lowdown on all things Boston Celtics from players, league executives, and the biggest names in the national basketball media. And it doesn't end there. The original Celtics podcast, Celtics Stuff Live, is back and better than ever before. Available Mondays on CLNSradio.com, Internet Radio Pioneers, and Celtics Diehards, John Duke and Justin Poulin go heavy on Boston basketball. With fun and engaging dialogue, CSL interacts with fans with weekly tweet and mailbags, all while featuring guests that are of the most familiar voices to Celtics Nation. Basketball in Boston is white hot this NBA season, and you don't want to miss any of this. Download the free CLNS Radio mobile app now, available for your iPhone and Android.
All right, welcome back into the CLNS Radio Boston Celtics post-game show. My name is Matt Rury, and I'm here with Bobby Manning. And Nick Cicento has been helping us out, too. The Celtics take down the Brooklyn Nets 120-99 tonight. You can give us a call at 347-215-7771 on the Movement Watch's toll-free call lines. And we are going to keep talking here for a little bit longer. Not just about this game, but about some Celtics topics in general. So feel free to give us a call. And we can also be heard on ESPN New Hampshire streaming live. That's exciting. Go to ESPNNHradio.com and check that out. And if you're up in the New Hampshire area, you can check them out at 900 and at 1250 a.m. on your terrestrial radio dial. We'll be doing a lot of post-game shows with them this year, simulcasting on their station. So that's some great news for us. And I personally, to pat ourselves on the back, great news for them too, because we've got a nice lineup of hosts that are going to be bringing you some great Celtics coverage throughout the year here on CLNS Radio. And don't forget, we are the leading great online provider of audio and video coverage for the Boston Celtics as well, because Jared Weiss is involved in all of these shows, most of them anyway. And if you don't catch him on the post-game show, you can catch him on our YouTube channel. I'm going to throw that out there as well, because we're not going to have a locker room report from Jared tonight. Normally we do after a home game, but when the regular season starts to kick in, we'll have him on. So instead of that, Bobby, we are going to have our own little discussion about potential Celtics All-Stars. And, I mean, it sounds like a boring topic because a lot of people will say, well, there's two. But is it going to be that easy for both of these guys, Isaiah Thomas and Al Horford, to get onto the All-Star team? Is there another Celtic that might take some of the spotlight away from one of those guys and make them less of an All-Star worthy candidate? And I mean, I don't know. I tend to look at it as maybe neither one of them makes the All-Star team this year if it's for the good of the team and the Celtics spread things out like I think that they might.
Well, what they have going for them now is that all-star pedigree. Really, once you make one all-star, I feel like there's a better chance that you're going to make further ones just because you've played in the game before, your name's been out there, and you kind of have that perception both within the league and within fans' head that, yeah, Isaiah Thomas is an all-star player, Al Horford's an all-star player. Whereas if you look at a guy like Avery Bradley or Jay Crowder, they're really going to have to get out there and make their case, do something crazy like 22 points a game, 6 assists a game, 3 rebounds a game that we saw from Thomas last year while shooting 36% from 3. Just an absurd year of production in 82 games from Isaiah. It really was a special circumstance where he was able to slip in at the end of that roster. And even then you could have said he was fortunate, whereas if you were from another market's perspective, you could have had a good argument for another guy going in a different direction who maybe just missed the team. So if anyone is going to do it, it's Avery Bradley. Avery Bradley is really starting to put it together, and you almost get scared of how much he's putting it together, because the next contract's going to be coming up for him soon, and he really looks like a guy who can do anything at this point. Even this preseason, you're starting to see him handle the ball a little bit. Against Charlotte, I saw him dribbling around at the top of the key, distributing the ball to people, getting some assists for himself. He just continues to add new layers to his game, and maybe it won't be enough for him to explode as an all-star, but he is going to become league-wide recognized as a great player this year. And there's different tiers. Maybe great doesn't touch all-star, but if Bradley's a great player this year, they're going to be able to do a lot of different things with him in different lineups, which is just great because they need all the help they can get at both ends of the floor, and he's able
to do it
at both ends of the floor.
I don't know if it was because of his injury proneness or what, but I'll be the first to tell you that I've probably eaten more crow on Avery Bradley than anybody on this network, because I thought that he had plateaued. I thought that he was going to be a above average to very good defender, and that was going to be it, and he was going to have a solid role on an NBA team for many years to come. I wasn't saying that he was a bad player. I never said that. I've always acknowledged his talent, but I just didn't know that he had these different levels that we've seen the past couple of years. So I want to attribute some of that to Brad Stevens. I think that he's done a masterful job coaching a lot of these guys and putting them in great positions and recognizing their talent and utilizing them in the way that they should be utilized. But you obviously have to give a lot of the credit to Avery Bradley as well, because he has stepped up his shooting game. He stepped up his ball handling. His defense has gotten better and better every year. And as long as he stays healthy, he seems like he's kind of a linchpin that makes the Celtics team go. And I think Marcus Smart has learned a lot from him over the years. And he's another guy that, just because of the way that he's built, is going to have a huge impact if he can do the same types of things that Bradley does and have the same type of progression that Bradley's had over the past couple of years. Because I fully admit, 3-4 years ago, I thought that his game was going to be one of those middle of the road, hard defender guy that you throw in there for a stop, but you can't necessarily rely on him to score 20 points a game. And I'm not saying he's going to hit 20 this year. That's definitely a stretch, but he should be one of the main focal points on offense. And if the past couple of years show you anything, he's going to be ready to step up. So maybe I'll eat some more crow on Avery Bradley this year and he'll hit 20 points a game or something like that. The main point I was trying to make with this all-star talk was, I think that there are a lot of different players on the Celtics that could step their game up. And at any given point throughout the season, the team could go on a run with them as the focal point, and Horford and Isaiah Thomas sort of take a back seat. And if that happens, then that's great for the team, but it may not be great for their all-star status. And I am 100% sure that both of those guys would go, they would give up the all-star trip to go on a 15-20 game winning streak and take this team far into the playoffs. So that's not a question of which one is better. It's just a talking point, you know, like who's going to be the best player on this team. I think a lot of guys have potential to make an impact on that race.
Rory, I'm going to have to take some of that crew off your shoulders, because I've been extremely hard on Avery Bradley. I think anybody that's heard me call into the show,
all right,
or talk on the show has heard me, you know, down talk Avery Bradley over the seasons. And I'm going to take some of that crew away from you, because the things
cool
that I've seen Avery Bradley do this preseason, which have been basically a continuation or continued development from what I saw him do at the end of last season, which is basically the ability to put the ball on the floor. His handles have improved dramatically. I've seen in this preseason his ability to create for other players. And another thing that I've seen as well is he looks extremely buff this preseason. I think he must have been hitting the weights extremely hard during the offseason, because same with Marcus, both of them, and I mean, this is,
yeah, they're competing together, man. I'm telling you, they're two bulls going at it now. Marcus Smart has gotten his little fire under Avery Bradley. That you got to give him some credit too, I think.
Definitely, and you know what? The interesting thing is, and not to beat the dead horse again, but it just goes back to Jared Sullinger. How could Jared Sullinger not stay in shape when you have this type of, you know what I'm saying, these type of guys that like to train, that like to get themselves fit, they like to improve themselves, add new elements to their game every off season to make themselves better, to get themselves into better game shape, to have this type of, you know what I'm saying, training. And then we look at a guy like Jared Sullinger who just couldn't keep it together. Avery Bradley has dramatically increased. The first thing in that first preseason game that I noticed about Avery Bradley, other than his new and improved handles, his new and improved ball distribution, was his increased upper body size and clearly increased upper body strength. He looks like a new player, and if anyone else is going to challenge Al Horford and Isaiah Thomas for an all-star bid, it's got to be Avery Bradley. I agree with you, Matt Rury, because he just seems like he's going to be on another level, and I think that 20 points a game is possible. Now, I'm going to let before I ramble too long, the question is going to become his contract is going to expire soon. What happens when his contract expires? And there's already been rumblings, whether it was true or not through his agent, that he was a little bit unhappy with his $8 million a year contract already. What happens when his contract expires? And in this new crazy, CBA that we have, this new crazy, money flying everywhere NBA atmosphere, what happens when his contract expires and he commands upwards of $20 million a year, $25 million, a max contract? Well, who is it that we keep? Because both he and Isaiah are going to be expiring, I think, at the same time. Who is it that we're going to keep out of those two? Because they're both going to demand a max contract.
Well, they are both going to demand a max contract. Sorry, Bobby, not to step on you. I just want to say that Horford is signed through there. Crowder is signed through that period of time. They've actually got Demetrius Jackson, it looks like, signed through that period of time as well. I didn't realize that he was guaranteed. So they're probably looking at some of these younger guys, and if they need to move on from Avery Bradley, I don't think that they'd be afraid to do that. But the salary cap is going up. For the past 2 years, we've looked at the Celtics offseason and we've wondered what they were doing with their money. Amir Johnson comes off the books as well. I'm here to tell you, Nick Sesento, you might not have to worry about both of those guys leaving or one of those guys leaving. They might be able to keep both of those guys and just let their younger players walk if they so choose to do it, because the money is coming off the books and it's going up. People are criticizing what Danny Ainge has done, throwing $12 million at Amir Johnson, now throwing $28 million at Al Horford. But like I said, he's got Jay Crowder for seven for the next three or four years. And he has a couple other young players that he can evaluate and decide whether he can get them on an Avery Bradley-like $8 million contract and then give Bradley some more money. So I am trusting Ainge at this point. I don't know, Bobby, how you feel about that, but I think that the Celtics have set themselves up well as far as salaries are concerned. Don't forget, they paid Tyler Zeller $8 million, and he's going to come off the books as well. So there are plenty of players that can walk away and distribute that money back to Bradley and Thomas.
I'm not sure if it was foresight on Danny Ainge's part, but he really did sneak in some of those contracts before the floodgates opened and everyone started getting paid. So it's
Jay
hard
Crowder,
see,
wow.
It's hard to see him replicating that again.
Best value in the league.
If he can proactively get to some of these guys and maybe push a little money their way now, front load that, and maybe we'll scratch our heads at it right now with a guy like Kelly Olynyk, but down the line, those contracts start looking better, like it did with Avery Bradley, like it did with Jay Crowder, whereas you kind of forecast their value of what it's going to be down the line. And it's going to be tougher to do now because, especially with Olynyk, a big stretch four, who's really the first core Celtic whose contract's going to be up this offseason. He's a restricted free agent. They're going to have to start making some tough decisions. We've been living in this dream world of perfect Celtics cap space that kind of started to dwindle down with Al Horford signing the max contract this offseason. No one's complaining about that. But tough decisions are going to have to start being made because I don't think you can sneak by the fact that guys have to get paid now. I think everyone knows the money's out there, and guys like Avery Bradley and Isaiah Thomas who've been playing with a chip on their shoulder. They may love Boston, but they love the money too. And while everyone else is getting the league is getting big money, these guys you may have never even heard of getting $12 million a year.
Guys,
I think Avery Bradley and Isaiah are going to want the dollars.
They are going to want the dollars, but let's put it this way. And we're here on the Celtics post-game show just chatting about some salaries and salary cap issues here on CLNS Radio. But when you look at the rest of the league, if you guys listen to my show on Tuesday nights with Calvin, shameless plug, Careless Whispers, you know that we like lists. We haven't done a show in a while, but I'm going to go through a short list here and ask you guys whether you'd rather see the Boston Celtics as the product of on the NBA floor or another team that has a higher payroll than them right now. I'm looking at this list. It's outrageous. Cleveland, obviously, number one. Detroit has a much higher payroll than the Celtics right now. I mean, that's just a joke to me. Toronto, Orlando, Washington, Milwaukee, New York, Charlotte, Atlanta, Sacramento. Are you kidding me? The Bulls, New Orleans, the Lakers, all of those teams have a higher payroll than the Celtics right now. My point is,
yep,
Danny Ainge has set himself up to do whatever he wants with either his players or players that come onto the market. And right 2 years ago, I would have said that he was crazy, and I was saying that he was crazy for signing Amir Johnson and giving him that money and not making a splash like they said they were going to. But maybe the splash has been right in front of our eyes the whole time. Maybe they found a great coach that is going to make good players and great players into great players and superstar players. And if that's the case, then he can pay them whatever they want, and the roster might work out. I'm just saying that if the Celtics have the 23rd highest payroll in the league right now and they're projected to be the number two seed in the Eastern Conference, they're only going up from here, because that's some ridiculous money management, if you're asking me. Sacramento has $4 million on their payroll than the Celtics do. The Sacramento Kings, they might not win four games this year, let alone have $4 million more on their payroll. This is unfathomable. I can't believe I'm looking at this list right now. It's outrageous. Sorry, that was my little rant. Anyway, I thought one of you guys
you
was going to jump in.
I
just let it sit there. I thought you guys were going to come in with that for me. I don't know. Sorry.
That was a good one to just let rest for a second.
All right, yeah.
Well, it comes down to the young players that Danny Ainge has been able to fill the roster with, and I think, you know,
it really does.
At Jay Crowder. I mean, nobody predicted it. I mean, I don't know if anybody – I would like to give Danny Ainge the credit for having the foresight to predict that Jay Crowder would be the player that he's become. But in all reality, he was a throw-in player just to make salaries match with the Rondo trade to Dallas. And he ended up becoming, you know what I'm saying, a key piece of this roster. And I think that the extension of the contract that he got to have him sign for another 3 years or so or 4 years for $7 million a year, that was a brilliant move by Danny. And I think that, you know, it's really just in you have to attribute that to all the young players, all the players that came in that were kind of devalued. There was a couple of seasons ago, just last season or the season before last, where they were saying the Celtics have every team's, you know, sixth best player. Well, I don't think you can say that anymore, because we now have two All-Stars and we have players that are playing, you know, up to All-Star level, you know, they are being considered, could possibly be, you know, considered All-Star level or All-Defensive, you know, player level, a defensive first team, defensive second team level. And we have those players now, and they're all on team-friendly, franchise-friendly contracts, at least for the time being. And hopefully with this off-season coming up, there's tons of great free agents. Once Tyler Zeller's contract comes off the books, if we don't trade him, once Amir Johnson's contract comes off the books, we might have that room to sign someone like Gordon Hayward that would just make this team even better. But that also depends on how good Jaylen Brown is. Will we even need a Gordon Hayward if Jaylen Brown turns out to be what we think he is? Or does, you know, Gordon Hayward then become something like, you know, a very tall, long shooting guard or two, and then we have a team that used to be very small in the backcourt that is now suddenly a very, you know, long, athletic, tall, multifaceted, versatile team that can play multiple positions. I mean, imagine having Gordon Hayward and Jaylen Brown, you know what I'm saying, playing the wings. That's an incredible tandem if Jaylen Brown pans out to be what he seems to be shaping up to be this preseason.
Plenty of options. Plenty of options for the Celtics going forward. That's the point of this conversation right now. And like I said, they're projected to be the number two seed in the Eastern Conference. So let's not focus. Let's not look too far into the future here. We want to see the season. We want to watch the season. We want to enjoy the season. This first month is going to be pretty interesting for the Celtics here, guys, as we wrap this show up here on CLNS Radio. They have some definitely difficult games in this first month of the season. If you're looking at their schedule, Golden State is coming to town. That's obviously one of the biggest ones on there. NBA finalist, team that the Celtics went to overtime and with here at home and then beat out in Oakland last year. So that's a tough game. They have two games against the newly formed Bulls. You don't really know what that team is going to bring together with Wade and Rondo. They could be tough early on in the season. That's kind of difficult. Cleveland.
I'll be at one of those games, by the way.
All right, beautiful. Cleveland is also on this list. The Celtics go to Cleveland, the reigning NBA champions, early in the season on November 3rd. So you're getting a lot of difficult games in the first month of the season up until Thanksgiving. They're traveling to Indiana. That's a tough game. They're traveling to New Orleans. You never know what Anthony Davis is going to bring to the floor with the New Orleans Pelicans. So he could have a monster game, and maybe the Celtics have a tough one there. And then the Golden State game I mentioned, and then you're coming up on a easier patch of the schedule. But wait a minute, the Spurs come to town right there the day after Thanksgiving. So the point is here, this is going to be a good test for the Celtics right out of the gate. And I like what I've seen in the preseason so far with what Brad Stevens is doing with the young guys and giving them some confidence and putting the rotations together so that they can be a little cohesive. I think that I expect the Celtics bench to win more games than any other bench in the league this year. I expect them to outperform most of the benches in the league. I think that they have one of the best benches out there, and as long as they have a cohesive unit, they're going to be able to win a lot of games. So some of those games I mentioned are very difficult, but I would expect the Celtics to roll into Thanksgiving with one of those top 2-3 records in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I don't want to see a slow start, and we saw it last year while they were trying to figure out some of their rotations. Tyler Zeller and David Lee got the start at the front court early on. They stuck with that a little too long, and the pieces really didn't fall into place until late November beyond that. So they stumbled out of the gate last year. I think they have a better idea of who's going to be playing where and in what positions this time around, especially coming back year three for some of these guys. Horford's a mainstay in the middle. But with that second unit, I think the biggest thing I'm going to be looking for early this season is that tandem of Terry Rozier and Marcus Smart. Who's the alpha dog in that duo? I thought we were going to see Marcus Smart step up, be the Evan Turner, control the ball, make plays with that second unit, and kind of lead them along on both ends of the court. But Rozier, what I'm seeing from him this preseason is a guy who's able to take control himself. He had a ridiculous fadeaway jumper off the dribble today. He's caught and shot from the perimeter and drilled threes. He's been able to do a lot of different things for this team, and he's a rebounder too. If they get in trouble in the rebound department, you don't think of a guard as a guy who can help you out there, but when he's on the court, he affects the rebounding game. It's ridiculous. I've never seen a guy with such a distinct skill set as Rozier, where he's able to rebound, shoot from a lot of different positions, control the dribble. I think he may step up and be the alpha dog on that second unit. I know I was big on Smart last year stepping up in that position, but all I see from him so far is still that scrappy junkyard dog who makes the plays a lot of other guys don't, just from a hustle perspective. And he's going to have to do more from a finesse perspective for me to see him leading that unit, because with Smart, you love and hate him being out of control, but there's going to be a lot of things to hate if he's out of control in the position where he's leading the second unit. So we might see Rogier take that. They're both combo guards. Their relationship is going to be a big deal on this team, I think, by the end of the season. They'll be playing together a lot.
And I think Rozier's ability, and that's one of the things that I don't know if people expected from Rozier when he came into when he was drafted by Ainge, is his ability to hit those shots. I don't think that he came into the league as a shooter, but I think that he's showing after the time that he had. You know, he was basically one of the D-League's best players last year. He had that valuable time. And I'm just going to deviate for a second. The Celtics have used their D-League probably better than any other team in the league to develop their players. And that's what the D-League is, a developmental league. And they've done it so well to develop players like Terry Rozier. Hasn't worked quite so much for James Young, but they've used it to develop players. I think Demetrius Jackson is going to do the same thing, developing, and if and when they need him, he'll be able to step up and step in on another one of those cheap, inexpensive franchise-friendly contracts. Terry Rozier is, I think, going to be that player that's going to surpass expectations. It's going to take that next step, even more so than Marcus Smart. I think what Bobby Manning just said is absolutely 100% correct, that Marcus Smart is still going to be that scrappy guy that's going to do one thing one game, something else another game. He's going to contribute in different ways, in multiple different ways, in different games. But I think he's still going to struggle, just as we've seen this preseason, probably still going to struggle a little bit to have a consistent what is he going to do every single night well. And I think that's one of the reasons that Evan Turner, to bring him up again, you know, in this broadcast, Evan Turner was derided for was that he was a jack of all trades but a master of none. And I think that's going to be happening. That's going to happen with Marcus Smart this time, because just like Evan Turner, he can't really shoot the three that well, or at least not yet. He hasn't shown the ability to shoot the three. He hasn't developed that three. He's a scrappy guy. He's a good defender. He brings that hustle. I think the reason that players love him so much is that he shows all that heart. He shows that, you know, that grit and determination. He's a stocky guy. He's a sturdy guy. But I think the backcourt player that we're going to see that's going to step up and is going to really play that role, as you guys have already mentioned, is going to be Terry Rozier. And his ability to rebound for a small guard, basically almost like a Rondo, but they can shoot. You know what I mean? He's that he has similar skill set, in that he can pass the ball, he can rebound. He comes from that tradition of Louisville guards that can, you know, they also rebound, because Louisville likes to crash the boards. Everybody crashed the boards, even the backcourt players. And I think that Terry Rozier is going to be that player that's going to step in. He's going to take that second year leap. And if that's the case, if Terry Rozier can be that guy that can lead the second unit, that where we don't need to have either Isaiah or Avery or somebody from the first team, from the starting unit, always on the floor with the second unit. If he can be that guy, Terry Rozier, that leads that second unit and plays alongside a guy like Marcus Smart and plays alongside other athletic players like Jewell Green and Jaylen Brown and even Jordan Mickey, if he can be the guy that leads that second unit, this team is going to be extremely dangerous, because we have a first unit and then very little drop-off on the second unit. That's what made Evan Turner so valuable, was that we had a guy in the first unit, Isaiah Thomas, that could pass the ball and distribute the ball, and there was no drop-off in ball distribution and ball handling in the second unit when Evan Turner came on. If Terry Rozier can take, and as Evan Turner also rebounded as well and was a good defender, if Terry Rozier can fill in that role, the hole that Evan Turner left, this team is going to be extremely dangerous, both in the first unit and the second unit.
Next man up, right? That's what it's going to be. Next man up. Somebody's got to step in and fill those minutes and get that ball distribution going on off the bench. And I think that they are going to start asking Marcus Smart to do things other than that, because Rozier has shown that he can be that ball handler. So look forward to that. I'm looking forward to watching these young guys develop, because this is going to be a good team. And for everybody that says that being a middling NBA team is not good and it's purgatory and it's just the same thing over and over again, I hope that this group proves everyone wrong and just proves that you can build from the middle and still have an exciting product and get better. Because guess what? As long as the Nets are bad, the Celtics are going to have good draft picks going forward, and I trust Danny Ainge a little bit.
Ooh, especially with the potentially top, you know, three pick, top two pick. I mean, the Nets.
That's right.
The Nets are basically like the Celtics' second D League team because they just keep giving us young talent.
It's so true. So a win against the Nets is a double win for the Celtics in all aspects. Everybody root against the Nets this year. I've never had respect for that franchise, quite frankly, and they're just proving me right recently. So I love it. Keep it up.
No scrappy win for the Nets this year. Get that out of here.
No, nothing like that. Yeah, nothing like that. If you're going to lose it to a scrappy team, lose to the Phoenix Suns or something. Lose to, you know, I mean, even – I don't even want to say that. I'm not going to go there that far. Lose to the Minnesota Timberwolves. Lose to the Sacramento Kings, who I just bashed for having a higher payroll than you. Just don't lose to the Brooklyn Nets, whatever you do. And they don't tonight. They win 120-99. All right, boys, that's going to do it for us tonight. This post-game show will be available for on-demand listening by searching for the CLNS Radio Boston Celtics post-game show on iTunes and Stitcher, as well as the CLNS Radio mobile podcast app. You can follow CLNS Radio on social media at CLNS Radio on Twitter, and please like us at facebook.com/CLNSFans. Also, www.espnradionh.com, that's where we're live streaming this year as well, at ESPNNH on Twitter and /ESPN New Hampshire on Facebook. Today's show was brought to you by MVMT. That's MVMTwatches.com/Celtics Beat for 15% off your first purchase with free shipping as well. And we also have Audible, which is audiblepodcast.com/try now for a free 30-day trial of audiobooks. Music was provided by Joshua Morse. We thank him, and I want to thank all of today's callers and everybody else who tuned in to the show tonight. For CLNS Radio, executive producer Larry H. Russell, program director Justin Poulin, the founder of the network, the one and only Nick Gelso, and my co-host Bobby Manning, my name is Matt Rury. We'll see everyone back here on Wednesday night when the Celtics take on the New York Knicks at TD Garden in their final preseason game. Go Celtics. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Peace.
Doing what you look like you're doing. Express yourself.